You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, it's a great night to be out on the screen porch having coffee, and I see you're enjoying a Pinot Grigio.
I am.
So it looks like we're getting closer and closer to start opening up the United States of America for business. What do you think?
Well, I think, and I hope that they take it very, very slow. I think that there's still a lot of hot spots, and I really don't want to go through this again, and I'm sure most people don't. So I think just taking it baby steps at a time is best for all of us. And for me, I'm going to stay hunkered down for a while.
Yeah, you know, I probably will too. I think you and I have gotten actually pretty used to staying hunkered down, you know, between the ranch and the offices. And, you know, we've got our staff all sequestered and isolated and working remotely or on furlough. So I think I actually kind of like this. I mean, I know business is a huge stressor, okay? But I kind of like this. And, you know, you and I were driving yesterday. I had to go down not too far from here to one of our big shopping centers and pick up an electronic component from Best Buy. So I'll give Best Buy, you know, a shout out. And what I found, and this is at the Rim, which is just outside of San Antonio. It's a big shopping center. And right across the Interstate 10, of course, is La Cantera. And so these are both big, big, big shopping centers with the big box stores and all the different things and restaurants. I mean, you name it, huge shopping centers. And usually it's inundated with thousands of people. And literally when I pulled into the lot, at Best Buy, there weren't any more cars than maybe 20 there. But let me tell you what I liked. I've shopped at Best Buy many, many times, bought quite a few things from them. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not real happy about the business model, meaning when I go in there, it's really hard to get some customer service.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And this time, I was able to get on the computer. I was able to order online what I needed, which was two very, very simple things, and pay in advance and get an access code, and then which came right to my cell phone, and it said, your products will be ready for you in an hour. I drove down to Best Buy, parked in the parking lot in a particularly numbered stall. I texted them, gave them my access code, told them exactly what stall I was going to be in. And I swear to God, within 2 minutes, somebody came out and gave me a bag with my stuff, with my receipt, and I was out of there. And I got to be honest with you, I really liked it because sometimes when we go there, it takes sometimes as long as 10 minutes to park the car. Then you've got to walk a couple of hundred yards, get in the store. Then you got to try to beg to find somebody to help you out. And then, you know, then you got to stand in another line at the cash register, and then you get out. And I went, I swear to God, from a 30-minute usual period inside Best Buy to 2 minutes. And I was in and out of that shopping center in a flash.
And you got what you needed, so that was great.
And I got exactly what I needed.
And, you know, I kind of had the same experience today where I wasn't planning on going anywhere, but our son called and he said, hey, if you're in town at your office, could you pick up something from the vet for my dog? And I said, sure. It's not real far from one end of town to the other. So
we live in a small town.
Not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
So I called him just before I got there and I said, hey, give them a call and tell them I'm outside. And he did. And I pulled in the parking place, and within 2 minutes they walked out and they said, is this for Remy, which is the dog's name? And I said, yes. And they said, here you go. And that was it. And yeah. Nothing, you know, just, very, very simple. And it's just a great way to pick things up, because how many times have we stood at a pharmacy and waited and waited and waited? So yeah, there's a lot of things that I like about this, and a lot of things that I think are going to change because people are liking this model.
You know, I'm interested in talking to you about that. You know, another a great example. I mean, and we've done this before. This is no significant paradigm change. But yesterday, you and I were working in the office. And we hadn't had Chinese food in a long time, and we've got a decent Chinese food store or food restaurant in our town. And so I had the menu already. And opened up the menu. I walked into your office. I said, what do you want? You picked it out. I picked out what I wanted. I called them up. They said, be ready in 10 minutes. I drove right over there, which was 5 minutes away. Parked right there. Boom. Hit the telephone number. Gal came out with our food, all prepaid. And I was gone.
I know. And yeah, it's great.
You know, and so I like that. You know, there are some very positive things that people like to do, including ourselves. When you go to the big shopping centers, you know, you want to kind of stroll around and see the stores, and, you know, it's vibrant. There's kind of cool stuff. You physically, especially for you, with me, it's not a really big deal, but for women, especially, they want to try stuff on. So, you know, they want to try on a pair of shoes, or they want to, you know, try on a coat, or they want to try on a blouse or a dress or whatever. And because everybody has just a different fit, and you're able to say, you know, make a determination whether you want to buy that or not. Online, you really can't do that, but they do have a return policy.
Right.
So, I mean, there's positive and negative things, but I mean, everything considered and safety being considered, the less time that you can spend inside a store with recirculated air, and you and I have talked about this before, with a whole bunch of people, the less time that you can stand in line, the less time that you can walk around in the store with recirculated air and being around other people that, you know, might have COVID, could be sneezing, could be coughing, whatever. I don't like the whole mask thing. I don't like the whole gloving up thing. It's all safety. And of course we do it, but I don't like it. I don't think anybody says, yeah, I really like to wear those gloves and that mask. You look you're robbing a store.
You look like a perp.
But I just kind of like this. I like this better, but I'm interested in getting an idea now that you brought it up, as to how you think the business world and the restaurant world and the resort and hotel world is going to change moving forward.
Well, truth be told, I have no idea, but here's how I would foresee things. You know, this is going to hurt so much our department stores and our big stores, our Penny's, our Macy's, I guess that Neiman Marcus is going to be filing for bankruptcy.
Penny's is on the verge.
Penny's has been on the verge for a while, and
Correct. They
keep hanging in there, and I'm Correct. Glad that they do.
We like Penny's.
Yeah. But I like those stores, and I don't want them to go away. And my fear is that we won't have those places to go to anymore, and I don't want that to be the case. And then I wonder, what will happen to all of these giant malls that we've built everywhere? If nobody wants to go back there, I mean, what will happen to them? And I have some interesting ideas that I'll share with you at some point about what could happen to them, which I think would be really cool. But
is that a teaser? You're going to tease me and walk away?
I don't want to change the subject. But anyway, I think that some of these things that we're seeing are going to stay. So I think you're going to have the option of going into Best Buy and buying what you want, but you may still have that option to have them do curbside delivery. I think that people are kind of liking that, and I think and I hope that it's something that stays. Now, interestingly, you know, when I talk to my sisters out in California, they don't get the same kind of service that we're seeming to get in Texas. Now, I don't know if they get it all over the country. I'm going to have to talk to more people and find out.
You know, I noticed that when we moved out to Texas, they do things a little bit differently out here, and it just seems to be much more user friendly in some areas. You know, like HEB.
Right.
Give a shout out to HEB,
sure,
which is our major grocery store chain mm-hmm. out here in Texas. And I mean, I really love their business model. I love their people. I love the way they do things, and I love the drive up pharmacy, which is super cool. And I like the curbside delivery system. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, and I was, I just assumed that all the stores were doing that. And when I talked to my sisters, they said, well, our store doesn't do that.
Yep.
So I guess that they have to walk in. But it's an interesting thing that I'm going to start asking people. But I do think that some of these things are going to stay in place. And I think that they should stay in place because some people are still not going to want to go into stores. And I don't blame them. So, mm-hmm. Some people get sicker with this virus than others. And I also want to talk about that because that's an interesting subject. But I think that we're going to see people buying a lot more online.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
Doing more of the curbside service and not going into the stores at least for a while. It's going to take some time for us to get back to where we were if we ever do. This group of people in life at this moment are not going to forget this experience. And they're going to be a little bit hesitant to go back to life as they knew it, I think.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. I would count myself as someone that doesn't particularly like to go into stores and congested places. But I was that way, before coronavirus. I just don't like really, really congested places. And if I can figure out a way to do something better where I can get some customer service and, get what I want and leave, then I love that. Because to me, that's downtime. And, I like to minimize the time compression and the stress of going to big shopping centers and, not necessarily getting what I want and not getting the customer service that I want, and compare and contrast that with shopping online, like what we're talking about, and maybe then just driving up to the store and get what you want, or have Amazon Prime, deliver it to us. But I do worry about the future of certain American businesses, because I agree with you. I think this is going to change the mindset for the older people. I don't think it's going to change the mindset for the younger people, because they tend to be risk takers. And we've seen that with, spring break and being on the beach and doing all this crazy stuff. But I think with the older people and the people that are in the risk groups, I think perhaps the mindset will be forever changed.
And I'm really interested to see how they handle this with cruise ships, because I mean, it's such an incubation place for disease if there were disease on the boat, and they need to come up with something. And I'm sure that they're working on that now, because I would really hate to never take a cruise again.
Well, you and I are cruisers, right? You and I,
well, we're not avid cruisers, but we like cruising.
Well, we'll take a cruise every couple of years.
Sure.
And we always love it. And there are certain cruises that we really love to do. And, especially like the European River cruises. I mean, I'm spoiled on that, and I'm hooked on river cruising. Just a more intimate, much more fun way to do things instead of being on a, gigantic, 3,000 to 5,000, person cruise ship. But I hope people continue to patronize the cruise ship industry. And I know you and I love it, but you're also correct. I mean, it is an area of incubation. But I've seen some videos, Lynn, of how they clean those cruise ships and, using the gases and all the, the different things that they do to, clean the ducts and clean, all the surface areas and stuff. And actually I find it quite impressive.
Well, but that being said, I have been twice on cruises where I've gotten sick.
Yeah.
And one was one of the river cruises, because somebody, and river cruises, let's be honest, are little older people most of the time, and somebody came on the boat sick and they had a respiratory infection. This was a few years back. And I mean, so many people on that boat, because there's only about 122 people on those boats,
right?
As far as
about 30 crew members.
No, about equal crew members is what I'm understanding.
You're
it's almost
kidding
equal.
Me?
Yeah, really? There's quite a few. So anyway, almost everybody on that trip got sick, and people were coughing and coughing and coughing. And I was sitting there going, oh my God, I'm going to get sick, because you can't get away from them.
Right.
And especially on the buses, on the tour buses.
Well, it's all recirculated air.
Yeah, but on the tour buses, they're sitting like right in front of you or right behind you, and they're coughing all over you.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that. I'm sure I'm not the only one in the world that hates being on an aircraft where you're in this little tiny cockpit, just like a boat. I mean, just like a bus. And there is somebody, I swear to God, right next to you or right behind you, and they're sneezing and coughing.
Yeah.
And I always say to myself, oh my God, am I going to catch this?
Well, and that was the other subject, is the airlines. But today I saw a really interesting airline design that somebody has come up with for the seats in the airline. I don't know that it would make a difference, but I would feel better. And what it is, if you picture three seats across, the seat closest to the window faces front, the seat in the center faces the other way, and they're kind of like little cocoon seats. Okay, so instead of being flat across the back, it's like a little cocoon around you.
Okay.
And then the third seat to the aisle sits again facing front. So I like that, because I wouldn't have the person right next to me, you know, breathing all over me. And there would be a space between myself and the person near the window if I were sitting, you know, in the aisle seat. So I think that that's really possible. That would take a lot of money for planes to retrofit that way.
Sure.
But they may have to get their business back, you know. So I thought that was really interesting. So I'm really interested to see what all these different companies come up with to mitigate this problem and get their cruisers back and get the airplane flying people back, because people are worried, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm one of them.
And, you know, people like us, for our businesses, we really do have to travel. And it's just sort of a necessity of the business. And it'll be interesting also to see, because I know the airlines have taken a tremendous hit, what the airline tickets are going to be like in the future. I mean, you can look at it two ways. You know, one way is they're going to be really cheap flights because they got to attract people and get people back on those airplanes that are, you know, concerned about their health and not wanting to get on an airplane. On the other side, they may take and ramp up their fares so that we're looking at super expensive fares because they need to make up for the lost revenue, and they might start charging us for every single bag we bring on the airline. You know, for instance, we're favorites of Southwest. We probably do 90% of all of our travel on Southwest Airlines, and the first two bags are free. You may see that completely go away. I mean, I'm just speculating, I'm trying to figure out, you know, how they're going to make up that loss in revenue. Hey, are you ready for a cup of coffee? Are you going to stay with wine?
I think I'll switch to coffee now.
Fantastic. I'll make you a cup.
What if a new treatment, backed by 17,000 scientific articles, was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
thank you for the coffee.
You're welcome.
You know, I mentioned some people get sicker from coronavirus than others, and that is really interesting to me. And I know that today you were telling me that you read, and I also read actually, that they've come across over 30 strains now, 30 mutations of this virus. And as it mutates, you know, it's like a moving target for people trying to develop vaccines, because if it changes, you have to change the vaccine. However, they have to go after the most virulent strains of...
Yeah, the most deadly, right. Most deadly strains. You know, let me just say one thing about that. You know, the article that I read had to do with Chinese scientists at one of the universities in China. I was trying to remember the name. But anyway, it doesn't matter what university it is. What's important is what the Chinese scientists are finding. And they tested 1,264 people. And when they tested the 1,264, they found that there were 30 different strains mm-hmm. of coronavirus, right?
So it's mutated.
Can't call mm-hmm. it COVID-19. You know, you'd call it like COVID-20, COVID-21, whatever. But because each strain has to have a different number to it,
okay.
right? And so, but the research project, they were full disclosure, they said, look, it wasn't peer reviewed, which means it's not vetted by other scientists and things. It's just their personal research project that they're doing. However, you and I have talked about the fact that one of the things that we are concerned about, just like any other virus, just like influenza, it comes back in different strains every right. single year. And we are always behind about a year catching up with developing a vaccine to, you know, to fight the different strains of whatever virus we're dealing with. And so coronavirus is no different in that respect than the flu or anything else, meaning that it can easily mutate. And that's what people are finding.
And it is. And what's interesting, and by the way, I'm skeptical of anything coming out of China right
course,
now,
so
you'll have to excuse me for that.
But I think scientifically, I think that bears out historically with what we
absolutely
see.
Absolutely, you're right there.
Yeah.
But what's interesting to me about this virus is, first of all, we absolutely don't have a handle on it. There's so much that we don't know about it, because it has characteristics to it that are like other things that we know, but it also has characteristics that are not like other things that we know. And it's kind of baffling to scientists. So about 43%, according to a study done in Italy, of people with the virus have no symptoms at all. None. Okay. So they don't feel sick, nothing.
No fever, no nothing?
No symptoms.
Wow.
Among those who do develop symptoms, though, it's common to feel sick and, you know, like the flu, right? Your body aches and congestion, fever, those types of things. General feeling bad. A lot of people get that. And then people can start to feel better, and then it can, bam, hit them really badly. So you can either keep getting better or you can completely go downhill. And what this article says, and it's a very long article that I read today, but it was from The Atlantic. And it was really interesting, because I really understand much better about this virus. So people, they get it, and then your body mounts a defense. Right?
Yes.
So your body
natural.
Can mount a defense.
Antibodies.
And that defense works for you. But because the way that the virus can react to people, it can really fool the body. And it's all the time it's invading the cells in the organs and different places and the lungs. And you don't even know it yet. You're just feeling general malaise, and you're not feeling that, you know, you can't breathe, or you're in big trouble.
You're not getting any of the major symptoms.
Right.
Sure.
And then when it's almost too late, your body says, uh-oh, I've got a problem here. I'm going to mount a defense. And it goes all out to mount a defense. And it's that defense. It's our body's immune system that really is the problem that's killing people. So what happens is you mount such a big defense that your organs begin to fail and you begin to have a lot of other problems. And the doctor's dilemma is that they've got to stop that overreaction. And here's a real simple way to put it, Ron, that is probably going to be easier because I see that you're looking at me with incredulous face.
Well, actually, I have a deer in the headlights look.
let me explain it this way.
Yeah.
On a very personal level, I am allergic to things. Okay. I am allergic to NSAIDs, so aspirin. Okay. So if I were to take aspirin,
I know I've been down this road with you.
I would get a huge immediate case of hives, but I would also get an anaphylactic reaction, which is my body mounting a defense for whatever reason against NSAIDs. And it's not the NSAID that's killing me. It's my reaction to it.
Oh,
does that make sense to you?
It does. It's interesting.
Okay. That is what's happening to the people that are losing the battle with coronavirus, is that their body is mounting this defense, and it is that defense that's actually killing them in many ways. And that's, at least that's how I read this article, and it makes perfect sense to me, understanding that when you get something like that, and your body overreacts to it, now you've got the virus and you've got the immune reaction, or whatever they call it. So you've got to control both, and doctors have to. It's like a very special dance between those two things that the doctor has to figure out how to do one without hurting the other, and how to do the other without hurting the one. So that's what's happening with people. Now, of course, if you have other things going on, as they keep saying, if you already have a heart problem, or you already have, because this virus does affect things like nerves, it does affect things like organs. Now they're talking about, you know, one of the symptoms is that your toes could be red. You could have red spots on the bottom of your feet.
Yeah, I just read that recently.
Yeah. So they're finding out things about this all day long, but it's really interesting. And I think that because doctors haven't known everything about how to treat all these things, and new information is coming out all the time, we lost a lot of people on the way because of their own body's, you know, autoimmune type reaction to this. So anyway, that I just thought it was really interesting, and it really helps me understand how people can die from this. The other part that you talked about with 30 different mutations is, you know, which one do you get?
Right.
Because some seem to be far worse than others.
Right.
And that's what's scary, is you can get one and you can, you know, just be like, okay, I didn't feel well for 2 weeks, and then be okay. But you can also get it and it goes from 0 to 90 miles an hour just so quickly that you don't know what hit you.
Well, you know, and that makes total sense. And I think the thing that people have to keep in mind, and I mean, they can complain all day and criticize and do everything like people normally do, but science, you know, this is like the wormhole for science. So they don't have all the answers. They're playing catch up just as quickly as they can, you know, play catch up, both in the United States and internationally. And so now, you know, today, the FDA approved the first at-home test kit for coronavirus, and that's the nasal swab.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw it on television. They did a demonstration with a couple of doctors. And so you get a little box, and your test kit's in there, and the swab is in there, and you take the swab and you run it around inside your nose, each nostril, and then you take the swabs and you put them back inside the kit box, and then I think it's a self-addressed stamped envelope, and you send it to LabCorp, and LabCorp does the analysis and, you know, tells you, you know, whether or not you're positive for coronavirus. But I was listening to an epidemiologist talk and a virus specialist, and they said it's making the news. And actually, there's about, this one was approved by the FDA, but there's also about 20 other ones that are out there that can be used that haven't been approved yet for the FDA. And he goes, but, you know, just keep this in mind. You know, that's the big headline. Ooh, new test kit. Everybody can take it at home. And by the way, it's funny because when we were watching television before they came out with the price, I said, that's going to be expensive. I bet that's $100. And it was $119
right.
when they gave the price. But here's the one thing that the doctors are also saying, and this is, of course, what bothers me, but it's consistent with science constantly trying to catch up. He said, look, this isn't going to be the end all be all for test kits because it doesn't really tell you factually 100% whether you tested positive or negative for coronavirus, because they still have a lot of false negatives and a lot of false positives.
Oh, well, that's not good.
And I know it's not good. Why am I going to spend over $100 for a test kit where I could get a false negative or a false positive? And so the bottom line is that the doctors are saying, look, yeah, this is a really good news that we are developing test kits. But the other thing is there is a lot of work that needs yet to be done on these test kits.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you know, there's another test kit that I think that they're working on, and I hope that they come out with, because what they found, at least in China, is that these inflammatory markers that people have in their body, there's one that's called a D dimer, and that D dimer, if you have it, you're four times more likely to have a fatal episode of coronavirus. So if they can do a test and find out if you have that particular predictor, then they can find out who's going to be more at risk. And if they get even a little bit sick, because right now, don't forget, they're telling people to stay home until they get really, really, really sick. Well, but if you were one of those people that had that particular predictor in your system, then if you got a little bit sick, they could save you by having earlier intervention. So they're finding that a lot of these drugs are working now that were out for other things. Some of the HIV drugs, some of the Ebola drugs mm-hmm. put out by Gilead are working really well. And then, of course, you have
I knew the name earlier this afternoon, and I have to tell you that I forgot it. But I know what you're talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah. And so right now we have three good drugs for this that actually treat it once you get it.
Right.
Nothing that is going to stop you from getting it. But if you are one of the people that have these markers, then you could be treated earlier. Because once you get into that inflammatory reaction in your body, it's almost too late.
Yeah. You know, what kind of bothers me, and you and I have, you know, we talked about this, and you mentioned it earlier in our discussion tonight, and that is the studies are showing that like 99% of all the people that have contracted coronavirus have contracted it at home in a closed environment.
Okay, oh,
they didn't catch it on the street. Okay, they didn't catch it at the beach.
But somebody had to catch it on the street to start with.
They don't know that yet.
Travel, sure.
All I'm going to tell you is that, well, no, Linda, wait a minute. They say that it's travel related. So what that means, to my understanding, is that the person that caught coronavirus caught it somewhere and then traveled to the United States or to Europe, Italy, Germany, you name it, and or back to China, and spread that disease around. But here's the point I'm trying to make. They are telling everybody to isolate in place, isolate inside your home. But if somebody in your home has coronavirus, your chances of getting coronavirus in the enclosed environment in close proximity to that person, I think the risk rises exponentially, as opposed to being out on the street, being out at the beach, being out in the park where there's ambient air, there's all sorts of things that can dissipate the coronavirus, you know, droplets and, you know, all those things. And that's one of the things that really bother me. So, you know, all the governors and the mayors are making these orders and these edicts that are being enforced by some, I think, ignorant people in law enforcement. I'm sorry, I have to be critical of my brothers and sisters, but I am going to be. And so you have people that are practicing social distancing out at the beach or in a park or jogging or doing this or doing that. And there was even a case recently in California, in Los Angeles County, where people were inside their car, separated from other people inside their car, and they were watching the sunset, okay, and deputies were coming up to the car and giving them $1,000 citations.
Yeah, that's okay, ridiculous. Okay,
well, guess who could be carrying the coronavirus with all the contacts that law enforcement officers have? They could be carrying the virus. And now you're cool, you're in your car, you're isolated, you're socially distancing from people, and then a police officer comes up to you and introduces themselves to you, who has been around all sorts of people that that may have coronavirus. Okay, so who's presenting the risk to who? You understand what I'm saying? And so that just really bothers me. If 99.9% of the people that they've tested that contract coronavirus and they go back historically and find out how they got it have been socially isolated in home with other carriers, then why are they picking on people that are in parks and at the beach that are already separated in within the ambient air of the outdoors? It just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. And I think we're going to have problems as a result of this.
Well, I think that this is a lot of these governors and mayors that just are a little power hungry, and you know, it's just not common sense, but they're trying to say, okay, here's the rule and everybody has to follow it.
Right. So let me grab you a cup of coffee.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, as we celebrate our four-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. We are a grassroots movement of patriots, blogs, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Cup of coffee, and I thought maybe we could cover some pandemic politics.
Okay. Always good to talk about.
So what's going on with the Congress and the funding for small businesses and, you know, like us?
Yeah, well, the stimulus...
Let's be selfish for a minute. How are we doing?
The stimulus funding was voted through Congress. I mean, sorry, not through Congress. Voted by the Senate, passed by the Senate. And they call it phase 3.5.
Did we miss phase 2 and phase 3?
I don't know.
I thought we were in phase 1 and all of a sudden we're in phase 3.5. How did we get there?
But the Senate passed the $500 billion coronavirus phase 3.5 bill, and now it goes to Congress. And we'll see what Nancy does with this. We don't know exactly yet.
Isn't it just incredible that basically one person who controls the majority of the congressional seats, one person can basically hold up the United States of America. I mean, hold the United States of America and our economy hostage.
Yep.
I mean, there is something wrong. I'm sorry. I'm a revolutionary. But to me, there is something wrong with any democracy where one person, other than the President of the United States, can plot the, you know, the success or the demise of the United States of America. I just find that absolutely incredible.
Well, this entire time period of President Trump's presidency, I find incredible because the dysfunction in this country has been amazing. And I think he's doing an amazing job with it. But the hatred of people has just made them do the craziest things. In this deal, $300 billion of the $480 billion goes to small businesses, and this, they say, is the last time they're going to give money to small businesses. They say that they have saved 30 million small businesses, and I absolutely disagree with that. There's no way that they saved 30 million small businesses with the amount of money that they had.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I thought small businesses this time around was going to get about $450 billion. Linda, you know, you wrote an article for America Out Loud this week, and you talked about small businesses as being the economic engine of the United States. And you gave a couple of statistics. And did you say that, like, over 90% of all the businesses in the United States of America are small businesses?
99.9%.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Not these big corporations like Chrysler and GM and, you know, Amazon and, you know, all these type of corporations. But you're talking about small businesses, correct?
Small business. And, you know, they are absolutely the engine of America. They provide jobs for so many people. So in our economy, it's 48% of all of our jobs in America are provided by small business.
Can you define a small business? I mean, how many employees are in a small business? I know you and I have small businesses. So, I mean, when do you stop being one?
I don't know. I think it's 500 employees, but I'm not sure of that.
Okay.
But actually, 18% of all U.S. employees work for companies with less than 20 employees. So
that sounds right. As a matter of fact, yeah. I thought it would be even more, but that's a lot. Did you say 41%?
18%.
I'm sorry, 18%.
Yeah. 48% of all jobs are through small businesses. Now, there are 30.2 million small businesses in this country. So for Mnuchin to say that they've saved 30 million, that would mean that they've saved virtually all of them. And that they never had near the money. There's just really not a huge percentage of people in small business that got those loans. I mean, there's a percentage and it absolutely helps. Absolutely. But a lot of people are not going to get it because the money runs out.
Well, let me ask you a question. I mean, you and I haven't even discussed this before, but you know, you're a franchise owner and you know hundreds of other franchise owners. Have you been talking with your brother and sister franchise owners in your corporation to find out whether they put in for the loans and they got their loans? Have you talked to anybody that got a loan?
Some do and some don't get the loans. You know, what seems to make the difference is, first of all, if you applied right away and you had all of your paperwork properly, which I did. But the second big point in my mind is if you applied through a large bank or a small bank. And the small banks did such a better job of one-on-one service and got those loans through.
You know, you and I are good examples of this because this is going to be a little experiment between your business and my business. You went with a very large bank.
I went with our bank.
Right,
our bank who handles all of our accounts.
But, you know, full disclosure, and I used you as our CFO because that's who you are for Martinelli, and you applied for the small business loan with a local bank in our town, in our small town.
For your company.
For my company. My company's not as big as your company.
And you got the loan.
Did I get the loan?
Yes.
When? You didn't tell me this. When did you find out about this today?
No, I told you. I told you that you were getting the loan.
Did you get something that said we got the loan?
Yes.
Oh, hell, I'm going to get away from this coffee and go to Texas whiskey.
Well, I mean, it's really only a couple months of relief for our employees. But that's a huge thing right now, and I desperately need it for my business, but so do millions of other people. So I want to go back to some of these statistics because they're interesting. There are 58.9 million people that are employed by small businesses in this country.
Okay.
That is a huge amount of people.
Yeah, when you consider we have only 331 million people in the United States of America.
And small businesses account for most of the job growth in America. So when you see numbers that say that we've had growth in jobs, it's mostly the small businesses. Nancy was holding up the stimulus funds, and it appears that now they've come to some sort of agreement because they added some of the stuff in that she wanted. And, you know, they did not give in on a lot of things I had hoped that they wouldn't, and they gave in on others. But, you know, small business owners, to have let them flounder in this has been very hard to watch, because they're real people. And when the Pelosi's of the world and the Congress decide to hold things up for them, people fall by the wayside day after day after day, because they get to a point where they can no longer make it. And here's a really good case for you is, in our small town, there has been a little hamburger joint here for as long as we've been here.
Oh, right on Main Street. And, yeah. And that's where all the custom cars go. And yeah, you always see them parked in front there.
It's just a historic little
landmark.
And
we love that little place.
And they had to give up. They couldn't wait anymore. And they went out of business. And there's going to be hundreds of thousands of people like that. And it's just heartbreaking. So when Nancy is showing her refrigerator full of expensive designer ice cream, we're starving out here as small business owners, and it's just so unfair to hold these things up for her politics.
You know, it's almost like a Marie Antoinette, let them eat cake kind of, soliloquy. You know, it just really bothers me. And I think what has been interesting for me to take a look at is some of the businesses that I think I consider large businesses, like one of the major fitness chains. And I just saw that the major fitness chain, and there's one in every single large town.
24-hour fitness.
Yeah, I think it's 24-hour fitness. And I think I saw where they were filing for bankruptcy. And so this just lets people know. I mean, it should be a wake-up call for people, because I think everybody has heard of 24-hour fitness, and you look at it as being a very large, you know, corporation with franchises all over the place. But sometimes, and it's been said numerous times, and you've said it, Linda, that sometimes these businesses are just working month to month, you know? I mean, they're hoping for profit and on a month-to-month basis.
A lot of companies work that way, and probably most small businesses, where they don't have a huge pile of cash sitting there waiting for an emergency. They live kind of hand to mouth. Right. They live and die on their sales every day, every week, every month.
Yeah. It's hard for them to get 3 months, you know, like some of the economic advisors say.
Very, very hard.
You need to have 3 months of liquidity, right? Liquid cash available in case of, you know, something catastrophic like this. But as you and I know, the majority of businesses are just not set up that way.
A lot of people will not make it through this crisis, and that's a shame. But that just kind of is, every once in a while in life, things happen that kind of makes the weaker of businesses fall off, and then the other ones get stronger. And that's just the way, it's just a cycle that happens for one reason or another. I remember that very much happening at 9/11. So the Senate has passed this bill, and now we have to see if the Congress passes it. What's interesting about the Congress passing it is this will be the first time in history where they don't have to all be there in person, that they're actually going to do it
electronically.
Remotely.
Well, you know, this is so stupid. They should have changed this rule and set themselves up electronically a long time ago. They don't need to always be in Washington, D.C. You know, if they're really about the people's business, then they should be in their own communities and being about the people's business and doing a lot of things electronically. I mean, you know, the technology is such that they can, you know, that they can have meetings, they can vote, they can do, you know, a lot of things without necessarily being in the nation's capital. Do you disagree with me?
I do somewhat disagree with you.
When we were in Washington, D.C., because you and I do business in Washington, D.C., do you see a lot of work going on there? I sure don't.
No, but I think that they should be doing it. And I think that, for example, right now, I think that they should be there. I think in a crisis like this, they should not be in their house eating, you know, $20 things of ice cream.
I agree with you there.
Should be there working, and I think that they should be representing the American people. And this is just giving them an opportunity to have another vacation and spout off things on Twitter and you know, Facebook, and not really be there doing the work of the people. It must be very easy to say from your couch where you're sitting in the lap of luxury that you're going to wait to pass this bill while hundreds of thousands of Americans don't know how they're going to pay their rent this month. In Texas, you have to understand that people, they live and die on the oil industry, and they have for a very long time. And when Obama was president, I mean, Texas was devastated.
Just take a look at Houston and Dallas, yeah, and especially Houston, which is our oil, I guess our oil financial center, if you could say something like that. And it was like see-through city over there.
You know? And when Trump came in and he made some changes, and he made us oil self-sufficient here, people got back to work, and the economy went up. And so here's somebody who knows absolutely nothing about this because she wants her Green New Deal.
And that was
because
the deal.
George Soros is feeding her this information.
That's right.
And that's nothing but something that will hurt America and hurt all of us. What I want to see is I want to see Texans back to work. I want to see us self-sufficient, self-reliant on our own oil. I don't want our country to go up and down based on what people across the world do.
And let me say something about that as it relates to oil, because it's not just the coronavirus that is impacting the Texas oil industry and energy. What's impacting is the games that the Russians and the Saudis are playing with regards to the price of oil. Okay. And also, because of coronavirus, we don't have people driving around in cars as much as before. We don't have people in airplanes. We don't have people in boats. You know, all the different things that use up oil. And so, the price of oil per barrel is really tanked. Now, whereas I really like the fact that my gasoline is cheap, and it's always been cheap in Texas. However, it's a lot cheaper right now. I would rather see my fellow Americans working, and the oil industry being solid again, instead of saving myself 15 or 20 cents a gallon on gas.
Right. Here's a figure to kind of wrap your mind around. If there are 30.2 million small businesses in the United States, 1.7 million of them got funded in that last stimulus plan.
Okay.
So 1.7 million out of 30.2 million leaves a lot of people still in trouble. Would you agree?
Well, yeah. I mean, and I think including people that we know very well that are business owners. And I mean, none of this is the fault of the business owners. Okay. None of this. I mean, we all have thriving businesses, and this economy has been the best economy in the history of the United States. You know, I know that President Trump likes to enhance things. Let's just say that, okay? His language is an enhanced type of language, but you can't argue with the fact that he's right, that this is the best economy we've ever seen, at least as long as I've been alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think it's not the government's fault either.
It is
not. That this happened. We're all kind of in the same boat together. And I understand, and everybody needed to understand, that everybody wouldn't get a loan. And probably, of course, a lot of people didn't apply for them. There's probably people who can make it through, so they didn't apply. A good amount of people are getting help, which is the good news. The go round number 3.5 is upcoming if they pass it. And, some more people will get some help. And then, I just don't see how the government can afford to keep giving money away. So I think that that's going to have to stop. And I think that now that we're starting to get back to work, we can start looking at some of these stores. Even if they have to walk it out to curbside, at least they can sell things. So I think that some of this will come back. I think it's going to be slow. I wish it would be faster, but I think it's going to be a little bit slow.
But the one thing is that eventually the other shoe's going to drop. Yes, people will get back to work, but for how long? And that's, you know, I don't like to throw a wet blanket on top of this, but it is a virus. And I firmly believe that it can come back seasonally, just like all the other viruses that we've seen have come back seasonally. It can mutate. I think the Chinese, even though we're very skeptical about them, it makes sense that it would mutate to different forms. And I'm hoping come the fall, October, November, we're not going to have coronavirus 20 or coronavirus 25 coming back and haunting us again, because I do not believe the United States of America can sustain being out of business for as long, you know, repetitively as long as we have been this time. And I do believe that there would, if it comes back, there will be so much stress and there'll be so much pressure just to go on with life the way we did before and become risk takers. You know, yes, do, you know, take all of the precautions that are reasonable precautions, but not draconian, close down this, close down a state, close down parks, close down lakes, close down beaches, you know, that type of thing. Because I don't think the people are going to put up with it. I really don't think so.
The key is going to be the testing. The testing is going to tell people if they have the antibodies.
But they've got to be good tests. They've got to be ones that can be reliable.
And they're going to keep working on them. Just think about this, Ron. It's only been 4 months. And in 4 months, we've done an amazing amount of things in this country.
Absolutely. So they should not criticize.
Of financial things, an amazing amount of mitigation for this virus, an amazing amount of medical, you know, development and vaccine. Yes. No, we don't have a vaccine, but they're developing things, they're testing things, they're getting things out there. This is just amazing to me. And people who criticize it drive me crazy, because this is incredible that we have come this far. So it's going to keep going, and the tests are going to get better and better. And then you're going to see a test that's maybe saliva, and you can do it at home, and it'd be like the early pregnancy test. You
exactly
don't even know right away.
And that's what we want.
Yeah. And that is going to be the key to this. And then if they develop something that talks about that D, whatever it was that I talked about earlier, that's in people that makes them react terribly to the virus. If you have that test, then you know how to treat those people and we can save lives.
No, I agree 100% with you. I think that's the key. I think universal testing, reliable testing, knowing who has it, who doesn't have it, who has the antibodies for it, constantly being on top of the new vaccines to protect us against new strains. And I just like to leave tonight's discussion on a positive note. And that is, in Texas, they are starting to open up the state parks. They're going to start opening up our county lakes, our city lakes, our parks, and things like that, so people can get out of the confines of home isolation and get out and enjoy some sunshine and some fresh air and just kind of get back to themselves again, because I know they're going batty.
And it's a good thing that we like each other, because we haven't been going batty, but I imagine that some families are having a stressful time.
Yeah.
So, yep, and I'll be down there throwing the ball for the dog. And
I've already washed off the kayaks in preparation.
Okay.
All right. Ready to call it a night?
I am.